You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading in case I got bored.
Well, hello and welcome to Literary Treks, TFM's books and comics show. I am just one of the hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me, as he is always these days, is the wonderful Jonathan Cohn. Jonathan, happy fall to you, sir.
Indeed, it dropped. The temperature dropped precipitously this week. It went from being, you know, late summer last week to it just got cold this week. And was not prepared for it. Walked out the door in short sleeves and then felt the cold and was like, nope. Walked right back in and put on a jacket.
Oh, man. And you're in Georgia, right?
Yep.
Have you gotten any of the weather from the hurricanes? Or
we were supposed to. We were right with I think it was Helene. We were right in the path of the hurricane, and then about a couple hours before it shifted and it went out of the path, and so we ended up getting nothing. It was like blue skies.
That's so crazy.
But yeah. No, it was like then we went to bed on the Thursday night of the hurricane thinking, all right, it's coming literally anytime now. And then woke up Friday morning and we're like, oh, it's all nice and peaceful in our area. But other areas in Georgia were not so not so fortunate.
No. Well, yeah, glad you avoided it. But yeah, those things mean business, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we get in, we got some comics to actually talk about today. So, yeah. So that's exciting. We've finally kind of starting to get caught up on those again. But then we've got a great Voyager book to talk about. So, before we do that, though, I just want to let everyone know how to contact us. Of course, you can always find the network at trek.fm. You can follow the network on X and Instagram at trekfm. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And while you're there, join our Facebook group, The Babel Conference. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and it should come right up. There's lots of good discussions happening in there, so join us there. And don't forget, we have a group on Goodreads. So just go to Goodreads and look up Literary Treks in the group, and then you can request to join there. I'd love to have you. You can see on our bookshelves what we're currently reading and what's coming up, so that's pretty cool. And then last but certainly not least, if you would be so kind to find us on Patreon at patreon.com/trekfm, your support would mean a lot to us because it costs a lot to put out these podcasts. If you're so inclined, you could become an associate producer of your favorite Literary Treks. I mean, your favorite podcast on the network.
Let's be honest, your favorite's Literary Treks.
Well, I mean, if you're listening to this, let's be. But any support would help. But, you know, you could join Greg Rosier and myself as an associate producer of Literary Treks, or again, yeah, any of the other shows. So, definitely, you know, would love your support there. And I guess that wasn't last because, you know, we would also ask you to rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcast, because you can find us just about everywhere. So that definitely helps other people find the show, and we want people to find our show. So please do that. Well, Jonathan, you know, like I mentioned, we're kind of catching up on the comics. We've been silent on the comics for a while, but we, you know, we did a big read through and we got a handful of issues to get through today. And then we're going to kind of put a pause on that and we'll come back and after we've read some more and try to get these more regular. But there's been so many comics that have come out over the last few months that it can be hard to keep up. But the first one let's talk about is called Sons of Star Trek. There's four issues. I think we actually talked about the first issue several episodes ago. But I don't know. I guess, you know, as a just kind of, it's not a one shot, it's a four shot. But, you know, what were your thoughts and impressions? How did you feel about this little series?
I really liked getting to see, you know, in an alternate universe, so many of the characters that we know in such different capacities, like getting to see Gul Dukat as as the captain of a Federation starship is just interesting. Interesting placement of him. And then we also got to see how Q Jr., or as they call him in the comic, QJ, which drove me bonkers that it was like, we need like a vowel in there somewhere.
Yeah.
But, we got to see QJ, doing the hijinks and him having the kind of obvious lesson of, you know, he's judging humanity when really he should be judging himself. And, it's a little wonky, but, it's an interesting, you know, combination of characters, Jake, Nog, and Alexander. Jake and Nog, obviously, you know, makes sense, but throwing in Alexander, who didn't have too much connection with them in the TV show, and also Alexander apparently going through a lot of stuff in this series, apparently, and Jake and Nog having to, like, knock sense into him at times. And I particularly thought it was interesting that Shaw showed up as, like, the engineer. But he was so out of character, but what justifies it is that he's an alternate universe. Yeah. So it bothered me how, like, kind and nice he was to everyone and understanding and open to all, like, oh yeah, of course we have Ferengi and here we're all about diversity. And it's like, that's not the Shaw from the TV show.
No. Well, it was nice because he kind of pushed Nog to better himself. I mean, it was obviously for Nog's particular story, but was a little bit weird having Shaw there. I mean, having they should have had like one of those one-off engineers from the early seasons of Next Generation or even like Geordi. I mean, like, you know, somebody would have been cool,
that would have been in character.
Yeah. But yeah, I was thinking the same thing about Shaw. I was like, this is weird and it's an alternate universe, so fine. But you know, I it was really interesting because I remember, like, when we talked about the first issue way back when, we were kind of like, oh, why is it just Sons of Star Trek? Are they going to expand this further? Are they going to have Daughters of Star Trek? And we did have, well, I don't know if she was an ensign here, but, you know, Beckett Mariner from Lower Decks. But, you know, I think this could be something interesting to explore in the future. But for this particular story, having Jake Nog and Alexander, as well as Q Jr., made for a fairly well-rounded story, I thought, where each of them gets their own little arc. In fact, each of them kind of almost got their own issue where they were kind of the main character.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
But especially for Alexander, who, I mean, the things that he was dealing with come straight from the comics, like from the Day of Blood comics, and his membership or whatever in the Red Path and the kind of murders and whatever that he perpetrated, and him kind of coming to terms with that and realizing that he could still have a life and everything, but he needs a better father figure still, but whatever, we can't change Worf. But I don't know, I thought it was just like a fun little series, and you know, pretty well done. And Q Jr. really felt like Q Jr. to me, like from Voyager.
Yes,
you
know, he very much did.
They did a good job with that.
And I really liked the whole, they kind of started in the first episode, but going into the second episode, or second issue, I should say, I really liked the whole, we keep having to redo it. I love that. I love that trope and what do they call it? The Groundhog Day trope,
yeah,
where
just kind of the time
reliving
loop
the same thing, yeah, the time loop. I enjoyed that part of it. It was pretty obvious as soon as the fourth issue opened and it was from Q Jr.'s perspective, I was like, I know exactly how this is gonna end. I was like, opening it from his perspective just like sealed it. And it was a fun story. It was a fun story.
It was good. And I will say that for next time we talk about comics, when we get to the Star Trek 500, we get a little bit more of Q Jr. So brace yourself.
Okay, yeah.
And it ends, I almost feel like, even better than this one did. So it was
I know that there were a lot of people that hated Q Jr. for a while, and he was like on the list of like most hated characters. Oh. I didn't mind him, but I think that was because when I watched Voyager, I was like 16 or 17. And so like, I was like, yeah, I kind of relate to him. I really liked him in, what was the one where they bring back Janeway and the Voyager books, the Eternal Tide or something.
Eternal Tide. Yep.
Yeah. I really liked him in that. I thought he was really interesting in that one. So, he's never like, I know for some people they like, oh, Q Jr. Ah, get that away from me. I'm like, you know, I don't mind him. He's not a favorite, but
yeah.
Oh, wasn't, Tuvix one of the, yes. That's right.
Oh my gosh.
Yo, I thought that was so weird. They bring in Tuvix.
I forgot about that. When the first time I saw him, I was like, what is happening? Because I think we see him even before we see Captain Ducat.
Right, and yeah.
So, yeah. That was very clever. Very clever storytelling. So, I wouldn't mind if IDW did some more of these types of things. It was just, it was fun. And
I think that idea we were kicking around, the four issue of like Daughters of Star Trek, I think that would be a really good idea. I don't know how the sales were on Sons of Star Trek, but
yeah, I don't know. But I mean, heck, IDW has been pumping these things out, where we've gotten a couple hundred comics in the last, you know, year or two. Cause I think they just had issue 400 come out in, 2022? And now in 2024, we've got, you know, issue 500. So, I mean, like they're,
and that's just the main line.
And that's, yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, they're doing something right. And yeah, hopefully people are picking these up and enjoying them.
Mm-hmm.
The next one we're going to talk about is just the 2024 Star Trek annual, just the one-shot comic. And I kind of forgot that they do this. They kind of tied it into the main Star Trek storyline that's going on, but it's kind of a side quest, if you will, that features Data actually leaving the Theseus to go search for Lore after Lore left and kind of went all evil again, as if anybody was shocked by that, from the Defiant series. So, yeah, what did you think about this one?
This one was actually my favorite of the ones we read today because it was like just like a fun Data adventure. Him being like, he put on like the detective outfit and it was like Data almost unhinged because he was like, I turned off the emotion switch, therefore everything I do is logical.
Yes.
I particularly loved when they walked into the Orion thing, and he's talking with the woman, and he's just ready to just like smack her down. And Geordi's like, "Whoa, like, dude, where'd that come from?" And he's like, "I have no emotions. Therefore, the slap was logical." I was like, "Ah, this is Data unhinged." So that
meanwhile,
was
Miles is like hiding. You know,
he's hiding. He's like, "Don't look." Though, like, that's Miles is standing for me. I'm like, don't look at that part of it." This one was fun, and the missed. I didn't remember all the timeline connections to the original to the mainline comics. So I was like pleasantly surprised when certain things were happening, and the villain of the issue was it Korvath? The Klingon.
Mm-hmm.
When he shows up, I was like, he's familiar. I know him from something, but I didn't know what. And then he talks about, yeah, I know about my future with Janeway and the device. And I'm like, oh, he's the guy from the Endgame.
Yes.
And that was a fun, like, I'm glad that they kind of like, were like, all right, if you don't remember, we'll jog your memory a little bit with that saw.
I love all these like connections they make. And especially for these comics where they're like, they're pulling from every aspect of Star Trek. I mean, even like in the main Star Trek series, we've got the Andorian girl Lily, who is Lily Sato, who is a descendant of Hoshi Sato from Enterprise. So, Andorian got involved in there somewhere. But yeah, like with Korvath, and I mean, that's kind of a deep cut. Almost.
Yeah, it is a deep cut.
You know, because he wasn't in that much of that episode. I mean, it's kind of the impetus of how she got there. But But yeah, and he, I don't remember exactly what his role with the Red Path or with the Day of Blood and everything was, but yeah, it was definitely fun to see him again. I also love that they're starting to connect things to the 2009 Star Trek movie, because here we've got Geordi with like a prototype ship that they call Project Sailfish, and then they even name drop like their future iteration of it is Project Jellyfish, which is the ship that Spock uses in the 2009 movie.
And so I didn't like know that that's what it was called.
Yeah, and so it's fun that they're like starting to kind of steer things in that direction. And I don't know what the timeline is like as far as not like the universe, but like the actual how many years, you know, in the future the stuff is, but they're starting to drop things about like this Nova that's going to happen in the Romulan system and everything. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to hear things about that. So that's a lot of fun too, just to kind of, again, just drop these little nuggets, you know, and just, for, you know, for anybody who's watching.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the last one that we're going to talk about today, is the another one shot. It's called Star Trek Celebrations. And this is, basically kind of a, I guess, like an LGBTQ tribute or a kind of Pride Month issue maybe or something like that. But it's five different stories from various, I guess, LGBTQ plus characters in the Star Trek series. The one that kind of surprised me that I never picked up on was Nurse Chapel from Strange New Worlds. And I don't know how she identifies, but you know, she got a story in here, and actually that was probably one of my favorite ones because she was trying to figure out how to surgically alter people. Like, we see so much in like Next Gen, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. Like, we always see people getting surgically altered to look like whoever, you know, they mm-hmm. need to blend in with, and to find that Christine Chapel was the one that was, you know, kind of competing to come up with this technique legally, you know, without using genetic manipulation. I'm working with Dr. Phlox too, like a much older Dr. Phlox, but mm-hmm. That one was fun for me. So what are your thoughts on this one?
This one didn't really work for me. Just none of the stories connected. I guess really the first two worked best. The second one I particularly liked because it felt like a little prelude to the to the audio drama, the Picard No Man's Land audio drama, which I just recently read. And so I was like, oh, I see the connections there. I see how it's setting that up, kind of. But doesn't really, you know, need this to read that. Mm-hmm. And then also the Sulu one was just kind of like a fun, he's fighting on the planet and like pulls a surprise move on the guy. Like, these, they're so short, you're not really getting too much character stuff. The other three, the one with Christine Chapel, Jet Reno, and Mariner. The Mariner one's just wacky. It's just
it's Lower Decks.
I know that, like, you know, I know certain people's opinions on, like, you know, Star Trek's supposed to be this kind of goofy and wacky sometimes, and I know that there's goofy and wacky stuff in the older stuff, but it's just not my style.
Yeah, that's okay. And yeah, not everything's going to work for everybody. And so there's going to be something that's somebody's least favorite and something that's going to be somebody's absolute favorite. So,
right. You know,
there's a little something for everybody. But yeah, I mean, this was, you know, kind of a new, I don't know, new themes for them to explore in the comics. And maybe that's not even right to say, but yeah, it's kind of one of the hard things with these one shots is that there's just not a lot of room to tell much.
And then when
story.
It's a one shot that's split up into five, that's what makes it even more crazy is that like a one shot alone is like too short. And this is like a fifth of a one shot.
Yeah. And it's not, and these aren't even like expanded, you know, like extra long. Sometimes they'll make them like double length or something like that.
But no, this was regular length.
Yeah. Well, and spoiler alert, the issue 500 is split into seven stories plus an essay from Dayton Ward. So it's we got to.
That was going to be really short. Yeah. You said one of those is a two-pager.
In there. Yeah. There's a two-pager in there. So
it's like I know some authors who have like the challenge to write 50-word short stories.
Oh, yeah. Microfiction or something.
Microfiction. Yeah. I'm just like, I am not interested in microfiction. That's just weird. But I will read that comic for the next time.
Yep. Yeah, so next time we'll talk about that one. We'll talk about, we'll kind of get back into the Star Trek continuing story. And then we'll also take a look at Defiant and see what's going on there. But in the meantime, for this one, why don't we go to war with some small things? Big story, small things? I don't know how to take
this. I don't have a better one. Yeah.
Okay, let's just turn the page. Well, Jonathan, we are here today to discuss the 2002, I believe, Star Trek Voyager novel, The Nanotech War, by Steven Pizix. And if I remember correctly, this was like the first kind of unnumbered, like when they stopped doing the numbering system. So this is like just a regular old paperback that they released. No number on it, just a good old-fashioned Star Trek story. And I think you said you were like 2 years old when it got released.
Yep, that is about how old I was. Actually, I just turned three. So, but this book, from when I was looking it up, it is the first book to release after the TV show ended. Oh. But they had not yet done the Homecoming stuff that's set afterwards. So it is one of the only, if not the only, Star Trek Voyager book that was not written during the show's time, or at least released during the show's run, but is set during the show's run. So it's in a weird, unique space on it, all on its own.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy. I had not considered that, but and you know, this, what's interesting too, is this is by an author who I don't believe has written any other he's not written any other Star Trek novels. He might have done some short stories or something for anthologies, but so I guess just first impressions before we dive too deep, you know, what were you hoping for? Do you think, you know, like, are you is this one did we pick a good one here to talk about?
So you immediately piqued my interest by choosing Voyager, because Voyager is my favorite series, which I know everybody hates. In fact, I have to tell this really quick story. I was in, I'm a teacher at a school, and I'm in charge of the History Bowl Club. And so we were meeting during lunch, and we actually got onto the topic of Star Trek, and my students started having a discussion with me where one of the students said that TOS is the best, and another student said DS9, and another student said TNG, and I was saying Voyager, and I realized, I have found my people! I have found students that love Star Trek like I do! Which I'd never encountered any students who like Star Trek. But anyway, of all the Star Trek series, Voyager is my favorite. And so the characters are my favorite characters in Star Trek. And because of that, like, I'm always excited to get more Voyager stuff. But I also feel like you better get the characters right, because they're my favorites. And so I had high hopes, but also high excitement going into this one. And I will say, I wish we got more Steven Pizix books after this, because I feel like he nailed the characters that he actually wrote. The problem is there's several characters here who just aren't in the book, really. Yeah. Harry Kim. Yeah. Harry is like, he's there in like a meeting once, and like, I think he technically goes on an away team, but like, Harry is like, he's not in the book. But the ones who are in the book, particularly Seven and Tom, were handled terrifically, like no notes.
Yeah, it was funny because as I started reading it, it was, you know, this book has the benefit of the author, had gotten, hopefully, to see the show. I hope that he watched it. I mean, he got the voices really well, you know, most of the characters. But it was really interesting as I was starting the book, he started it just the way that he described things, some of the stuff that people said, as if somebody was not familiar with the show at all. So he sets up everything for you, and he might have been doing that for himself even. And so you know exactly who's who, where they're at on the bridge, where Voyager is, and to some extent why, you know, why they're far from home. And although I didn't really need that, it was just a good couple chapters, you know, to get set up and kind of put everybody in their places, you know, in the timeline and everything. And, but yeah, as far as, you know, when he got through, one thing I'll say about this book is this felt like, Well, this felt like an episode, like a longer episode, but this also just kind of feels like really good Trek fiction, you know, kind of things that we want of like, you know, all the toys are back in the box by the end, but it gives us some good, you know, growth and development for some of our characters like Tom, Seven, B'Elanna. Really those three, I guess, you know, if I, you know, like, I think, you know, like Janeway's just kind of, she's the captain, you know, she has to be there, but,
I think that of all of the Star Trek Voyager books that I've read where Janeway's not dead, this had the least Janeway of any of them. Yeah. Cause I've read most of the Christy Golden, Voyager books, and I've read all the Kirsten Beyer ones, and If Janeway's alive, she is the center of attention in all of those books. Yeah. And so I was very surprised because, you know, share the love. And I understand why they always made Janeway. She was really the draw of the show, besides in the later season, Seven kind of became the draw. Mm-hmm. But, you know, starting off, you know, Janeway, first female captain, Kate Mulgrew, like it was she was the big draw of the series, so it makes sense. But it's nice to get to highlight the more minor characters. Chakotay is like present in this. He just doesn't have an arc. He's just kind of there helping everyone out, but he's at least a lot there a lot. And he felt very in character with it. I just like the world building in this one. I thought that the because it felt very deep. It was deeper than the average. You know, the numbered novels, they're really short. They, you know, those were closer to 200 pages and they did not get to do too much story as this one. And so, they don't generally have this fleshed out world where this is not just a planet with the whole nanotech stuff going on. And they're also doing in that first contact area, but they also have different political factions on the planet. And we get to see from those political factions' perspectives. And I was like, you know, this is a surprisingly in-depth look at this. Like, I feel like we really get to see what this planet has to offer. So I really liked that.
Yeah, and I feel like that it's, I mean, this, I have a feeling we're going to both just be dropping effusive praise on this book as we talk about it. You know, this has just got some of that stuff that you just want from a Trek story. Cause you know, with this first contact, mission, I mean, it's not even a mission really. It's like the, you know, the ship gets damaged in like an ion storm and, they happen across another ship that's damaged and it happens to be that guy's first warp flight or that species' first warp flight.
So technically we're not violating the Prime Directive.
I know, yeah, that's the thing. Like, you know, like that's, and this is not a knock on the book. This is a knock on the characters. It's like, I actually don't feel like Janeway, did so much of her, the due diligence as she should have done. I mean, cause yeah, like in their meeting, everyone's like, well, technically, you know, like even Chakotay is like, I mean, really, this is technically the Prime Directive doesn't apply here because they have warp. And they're like, yeah, but they like literally just did it and it broke down. Like, so, I mean, is it really, but we're broke down and we need help, but they've got a space station, you know, and they're kind of doing this thing where they're like, they even kind of, point out, you know, Star Trek tends to have this monoculture view of worlds. Like, you know, when they talk to the world's leader, that is the one person authorized to speak on behalf of the entire planet. And they mention that here. They're like, you know, we don't actually know if, I can't remember the lady's name, the secretary, but Janeway at some point was kind of even pondering like, oh, you know, I wonder if she speaks for the whole planet. Well, they're helping us. So, and she kind of like brushes it off. And again, this is not on the writer. Like I thought that was fine. It was a little out of character for her, but you know, you could kind of see the desperate place that they're in. And it kind of set up the story, you know, as far as, you know, whose side are you on kind of thing, you know, as the story progresses.
And it also sets that, you know, Janeway has just had, you know, mishap after mishap for like 7 years. And she's like, man, everything's going well. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to mess up the good. You know, we have the good luck for once. So I understand for her perspective from that. And I thought that, you know, exploring the different people of this planet,
was really interesting because you get to see the high-level political people. You get to see the science people with the engineer, who's the guy who actually made the their warp drive type thing. And then you also get to see, like, the guerrilla fighters and the people who are in the resistance, people who were captured, groups like that. And so you do get to see the multifacets of this society. It's not just, you know, the one. Usually you get one of those three. Mm-hmm. But this time we got all three, which is why I thought it was just so well done. And they all felt like unique characters, too.
Yeah.
That I really liked. I by the way, before, when I first saw the book, when I was going to buy the book, I did not realize what was on Tom's arms. So I was like, man, did he get tattoos? And I just missed it. But
I thought it was Borg tech when I
right. And I did love the scene where they, like, they're about to bring the aliens on board, and then they're like, oh no, we can't let them on, they have nanotech. And I literally went, oh, that's why it's called the nanotech core. Yeah. I was like, I was wondering when nanotechs were going to show up here. Well, that
was like, that was just part of the thing too with these, this alien species. Like, you know, you mentioned the world building, and that, you know, includes these people who are very alien to our characters. And I want to say they have like six legs. Like, they walk on the back four and use the front two, like, arms, or I can't remember exactly. It was like really actually hard to picture them. I kept picturing a dog. I think they mentioned.
I did kind of too. I pictured, because they use the word snout a lot. So I pictured a dog with extra legs, but with they described it having a long neck. So I imagined like a giraffe neck type thing. Mm-hmm. So I was picturing this monstrosity.
Yeah. Which, but I mean, you know, like, that's not something that we could do on the TV show, at least back in this time. And that
they'd have
time
to keep the humanoid on the TV show.
And so, like, and humanoid is a word that they have to, like, you know, describe, like, what that means. And,
right.
And even, like, you know, I love that the author kind of pointed out, like, we always just, you know, we go to a new planet, we just assume genders, and, like, you know, we just, like, oh, that sounds, you know, because of the actor who's playing it, you know. Right. And here, both sides were kind of doing that thing, like, I mean, I'm calling that person her and she, but I... that's just what they strikes me as. In most cases, it seemed like they were right, but, like, it was just kind of an interesting, you know, kind of nuance, I guess, that you don't really think about that would really actually come into play in a situation like that. Like, just trying, like, how do these people identify themselves? Like, do, you know, do we even have the same do they use pronouns? Are they unisex or whatever that would be, like, and you know, or is it like the Andorians have four sexes? Like, you know, but how deep do you get in First Contact?
I'm glad they don't go too far. They kept it. They were like, all right, do we need to explore this? Nah, we figured it out. It's all good. And I was like, oh my goodness. And there was I don't know if you remember the 50th anniversary trilogy that they did, that Greg Cox, David Mack, and Dayton Ward did. That's the Legacies trilogy. And in the first book, he introduces these aliens that were using, like, because they were this alien thing, they were using this, like, made-up pronoun word that he had made up back then.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was so bizarre to read on the page. And I'm like, okay, I get that you want to make this alien, and I get that you want to be, like, different with the stuff. But just make it easy. Just, like, be like, pretend it's a male, and we're just gonna go with using he, him, all that stuff. I'm like, don't give me the ZG, whatever it was in that book. So I'm glad here they were kind of like, they explored the question, and they're like, all right, we're done. We're gonna call them regular stuff. Yeah. We're not making it complicated.
Well, and Peter David did that in the New Frontier books too.
Oh, he did?
With Burgoyne, the character Burgoyne is a it's a hermaphroditic species, and so they've got their own pronouns, and it's hard because, like, whenever we've got either words that are new to me, or when they're using, like, alien words, a different language or whatever, I get so stopped up.
Yes.
Because I want to know, like, how does this pronounce? Like, how am I going to hear it? Like, you know, like, and I will get, like, It kind of sucks me out of the reading for a second, because I'm, like, sitting here in my own brain trying to figure out, like, what, how do I, if I'm going to say this out loud, like, right now, what is that going to sound like? So
we've talked about, like, how it fits the world building and how it's deep. And we've also talked about how it like fits Star Trek concepts of exploring these ideas of first contact, of exploring the nanotech stuff and the war. But that's not what made the book great for me. What made the book great for me really was the character arc that happened in the book. There's two main character arcs, and there's a third that's tied into one of them. You have Seven's character arc with her bully slash revenge storyline of being kidnapped. And then you had Tom's character arc that was about him being kidnapped and then him losing his memory. But to me, the best one was B'Elanna's, as you described, because she is reacting to everything happening in his story arc. And them being newlyweds, not yet having, you know, I don't think that she's aware that she's pregnant at this point. So she doesn't know she's pregnant with the child, but she's, you know, they're newlyweds. She's trying to learn how to be softer in the relationship and stuff. And she has to contend with the idea that maybe his amnesia is going to be permanent. Maybe he's not going to remember. And she tries like, oh, I'll just jog his memory, or maybe I'll just tell him everything he needs to know, and he's just going to instantly fall back in love with her. And when that's not working, you see the panic in her eyes. And I loved B'Elanna's storyline. Did it work as well for you?
Yeah, it did, because it just added some realism to it. I mean, when you think about, like, if you have a loved one who all of a sudden had amnesia, and, you know, one of the things that was going through my mind that I don't remember if I'm sure it ran through her mind, but was, you know, like, yeah, I'm going to try to jog his memory, but if I can't, will he still fall in love with me again?
Right.
You know, and she's kind of having kind of an existential crisis with it. And, doing her best to, you know, do the things you said to soften, because, you know, she wants to stay attractive to him, because he, you know, even in the early days, like, and I think he, you know, Tom even kind of recollects some of this, that like when he first met her, he thought she was abrasive. Like, he never could have imagined falling in love with her. But as they got to know each other, you know, so I don't have any concerns that they wouldn't still find each other, you know, even with the amnesia. But that was a really interesting and pretty deep story to follow for really kind of almost a C plot of the book, you right. know, for B'Elanna. And I, you know, it was hard on Tom, you know, because we got some story with Tom, but once he got the amnesia and was back on the ship, it really, I think, did pivot to be more of B'Elanna's story. I mean, he's still trying to, it's still his story, and that he's trying to like jog his memory and like figure out his place in this world with, I mean, he knows how to do his job, it sounds like, but he doesn't remember people and things and, you know, his own memories. But, you know, to get to really see it from her eyes and her own frustrations with it was really a really fun part of it.
And I thought that Stephen Pizzix did one thing in particular that I thought was really interesting, threading the needle of the characters and story. Was you have that alien who was with Tom, and they end up saving and bringing the alien on board the ship. And Tom has this connection, this kind of friendship with the alien, because she's like the one thing that he knows from before he was brought on board Voyager and was like dumped all this information on. And so he has this connection with this alien. And there's a moment in the book where B'Elanna is looking at that and she feels worried. And this alien has no, at least evident, intention of, you know, trying to woo Tom. And in fact, several times throughout the alien storyline, the alien's like, no, B'Elanna's your wife. You have to go to B'Elanna.
Yeah.
And so the alien's, you know, doing the right thing. But there's just that fear that she's like, you know, I'm his wife. He's not even connecting with me because of the amnesia. He's only connecting with her. And you, but we, the author didn't try to write like a seduction or Tom actually doing anything. She just wrote in the back of everyone's mind that fear, particularly in B'Elanna, that fear that, oh no, this might be, you know, bad for us. And in fact, by the end of the book, B'Elanna's even willing to let him go because she cares about him that much. And I was like, that was just, any other author might have like gone a little too far in a certain direction with one of those characters. And would have, it would have, I think, fallen apart. But I think that Pizzix, you know, threaded it well, and I was like, you know, it's believable, and I'm happy with the outcome, the way it worked out.
Yeah, and it fit the characters, it fit Voyager's story as a whole, and it added a lot of character growth for both of them. Mm-hmm. Something that's off screen, it has, you know, obviously no impact on the actual show itself, except just gives us a deeper kind of, I guess, understanding of their relationship that we saw on the show that kind of, I wouldn't say it came out of nowhere, but like it happened very quickly when it did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just gave us some more depth to those characters, which was a lot of fun. And again, like what you want from the tie-in type of books.
And of course it set them like, in the back of my mind, I knew that they were going to be fine, but I didn't know how it was going to end. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew Tom and B'Elanna have to end up together because I've seen the rest of season 7. But I didn't know how it was going to, like, is he going to get his I was wondering, is this author going to keep the amnesia and Tom's just there to kind of tell Tom everything? There's no way they're going to do that, right? Yeah. I don't know. And so I just loved that, like, he made me guess. He made me wonder. What freedom? I'm sure that they said, okay, but he has to get his memory back at the end, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure the editors told him that. But at the back of my mind, I was like, I don't know. Yeah. So
it's like 2 pages from the end, too.
Yeah, 2 pages from the end that he gets it back. And B'Elanna, like tackles him. And she's like, and he's like, thinks she's going to be all mad at him. And instead, she's just happy to have him back. Mm-hmm. That was sweet. Then we have 7 of 9. And her story was interesting because I never got from the show, from any of the episodes, that she had resentment towards the Borg. In fact, I felt the opposite. I felt she had this respect for them. She's chosen the other path, but she respects the Borg for what they're trying to do and for the way that they do it. And she never really seemed to have animosity towards them. Like I'm going to fight you because you're my enemy, but not because I hate you.
Mm.
Yet here, it seems like that anger that, you know, in trying to reconcile having a childhood, she finally realizes that what the Borg stole from her, and she takes it out on this people that are using nanotech like the Borg. And it was interesting because I almost feel like it's both out of character and in of character. It's out of character because we never got to see that. But it's in character because maybe we never saw that in the show because it finally happened here. And before the show, she never showed resentment towards the Borg. And then this event happens and she reconciles it and then she doesn't have it afterwards. So it makes sense the way that the author handled it. I just felt it was odd because I'd never gotten that in the show.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And actually, you know, when you kind of think about how she's written in this book too, you know, she's a lot of that. Those thoughts are internalized, mm-hmm. which we saw a lot with Seven on the show.
Yeah.
I mean, and early on, obviously, she, you know, when she joined the show, there were times where she wanted to go back, or she thought mm-hmm. she wanted to go back. You know,
right.
But yeah, like you said, it was kind of I hate you because you're my enemy, not because of anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we. Yeah, it's just another place where we got a lot of depth to her character. Because even if, so, you know, she gets kidnapped and they're trying to like extract her like she's essentially tortured by, you know, this group that's trying to infest her with their nanotechnology to almost assimilate her nanoprobes. And she fights him off and fights him off. And she even warns him too multiple times, like, it's not going to work. In fact, it's actually going to go bad for you. And exactly what she tells them is going to happen happens.
Yeah.
But, you know, even, you know, towards the end when they're trying to kind of reverse the thing that happens and she's kind of standing there like, I don't know, they kind of deserve it. Like, I don't know if I want to help them. And it, which kind of actually reminded me of, well, a couple times there was an episode in TNG where Worf needed something and they wanted to get it from a Romulan.
Mm-hmm.
Was that what it was? And he was willing to die rather than take, you know, blood from a Romulan or whatever it was, like an organ. And B'Elanna had that same experience with a Cardassian that she was not willing to help.
Yeah, I remember that episode.
Yeah. And there was a Cardassian, there was something else that B'Elanna actually had to deal with too, but you know, it's just one of those things where they hurt her, you know, like this species hurt Seven. And so she's like, look, they deserve it. I tried to stop them. I tried to warn them. You know, this is just going to be, you know, like the whole planet is turning into Borg, you know, right, like yeah. She's like, well, you know, that's just, I, you know, whatever, it's going to happen. And, you know, she's, you know, and hey, I hate bullies. You know, I despise bullies. I, there's no place for them. And, you know, like, and we see that, you know, her as a child in a holodeck simulation, there's a bully there that she's got to contend with, which
and
is
she
something
just erases
she's
the bully. And well, she goes, whoa, man. Like,
yeah,
he's like, we can't do that. That's called murder.
Yeah. Well, and then that's what she's trying to do with this planet. She's like, it's a planet of bullies. They bullied me and now I'm going to teach them a lesson. But you know what? Like you could really feel with her for her struggle here, because it's like, you know, when you're just released from literal torture or rescued from this torture, you know, is it really going to be your inclination to go and then help the people that just tortured you? Even though, like, and she acknowledges, like, I understand there's a lot of innocence here. There's children there, you know, like, you know, there's people who did not do this to me, but at some point everybody's guilty, you know, like in her mind. And especially when it comes down to, like, I was actually getting confused a couple times in the story of, like, who was kidnapping who, because B'Elanna gets kidnapped at one point.
Right.
And is rescued almost immediately, which was kind of funny. They're like, well, we found her. Beam her back. Okay. That's done. But then when her and Tom get kidnapped and, you know, I think they're essentially with, like, kind of the same faction, I guess, the same, you know, race of these beings or whatever, but like, you know, Tom ends up as a slave, a servant for the engineer that they first met at the beginning of the book, which I was just like shocked, you know, when that was like, oh, this is not a good guy. And then, you know, when we find out the people who are torturing Seven are essentially those, the same people that Voyager's been dealing with like the entire time. It was just,
and then she gets broken out of the there, and she's like, great, I got someone to help out. And they're like, actually, we just do that because we also want your nanoprobes. And she's like, come on. She's like, all right, nobody gets freedom. Everybody dies. Like, all right, I've had it with both of y'all. So
yeah, because she couldn't trust anybody at that point. And, you know, I thought those twists and everything were so well done, because again, when Tom wakes up and realizes he's in the house of, you know, Master Zedrell or whatever the guy's name was, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's the warp pilot that seemed like he was a smart guy, but kind of a, I don't know, not somebody who I would think would have this huge mansion with servants and your slaves, really, and you know, all this stuff. But then, with the jailbreak scene.
Yeah,
I bought it at first too, and the person's like you. God, what they say? They're like, well, we're breaking you out. Your people are here. That's them outside, but they're causing a diversion so we can get you out of here. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And then as we're going along, I was like, well, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense, because they were fighting their way in anyway. Like, why would they have just gone and rescued her? And then we find out that it's one of these other factions that you know, so I thought he did a really good job of like kind of weaving those all together, and I mean, sowing that distrust for Seven, you know, throughout this story for her to really kind of act on and have to kind of heal from by the end of it.
And then, you know, they, as you mentioned earlier, it's kind of a put everything back in the box type thing where, all right, Voyager's fine. Nobody really died. We're all fine here. And Voyager's able to continue on. And I don't remember. Did they continue developing warp drive, or were they kind of stunted at the end? I can't remember.
It was kind of
fast ending.
Yeah, it was a fast ending. They were kind of stunted because essentially like all of the solution that Seven came up to kind of cure them from becoming Borg. Effectively shut down all of the nanotechnology that was like running all these people's lives. And so they had all the tools to do it. They just didn't really know how to use them because they'd been relying on this nanotech for so long that they've kind of forgotten their roots. And like they even talk about like nobody knew what to do with a hammer or, you know, things like that. And so it was and even the nanotechnology was still it wasn't like destroyed, it was just inactive. And so like I think that there was a person who now I can't, there were so many characters, it was hard, like on the of the aliens it's hard to remember who there were, but there was some like professor or something like that who had the ability to do it. It's just like time consuming and expensive and all this stuff that, you know, people had to, it was one of the Shirekti or Utekshi, or I don't know, whatever they call, like one of the poor people, like the poor sections of the planet, or where like the that was kind of behind the shield or whatever, that were literally having to fight for their lives. But yeah, they so it's kind of a Kirk way to end things here, you know, just like, all right, you know what? We're taking away your nanotechnology and you're going to have to deal with it.
Yep. That is a very Kirk way of dealing with stuff. And the joke that Tom plays on B'Elanna feels like a joke that like Kirk would play on Spock or something, or McCoy. Yeah. Yes, yeah. You're right. It would be McCoy.
Yeah. No, that was, yeah, it was, it's it just, The ending happened really fast, but I feel like it was, I didn't need anything else. You know, he didn't need to slow it down or anything. Like the action and everything kind of happened, like, yeah, like literally like up until the last couple pages. And to me, that just, it worked well for this book.
Yeah. So I guess we'll go to our ratings. I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. You know, as long as you nail the characters, I'm probably going to have a good time. And I felt he nailed the characters. I wish that we could get a book that focused on Harry and maybe Chakotay a little bit more. Although I think he got plenty to do in the Kirsten Beyer stuff. Mm-hmm. But like Harry is the one character that of all the Voyager books I've read, I feel like he's gotten the least development. And the Doctor. We didn't even talk about the Doctor once. He was there, but he had nothing to do here either.
Same with Neelix. I mean, Neelix was the ambassador, but he...
Although Neelix does Neelix. No, he doesn't really need...
He's fine.
He's fine, yeah. I actually did find it funny them using Neelix as the person as the go-between, and Neelix understanding some of the stuff and being like, we're not gonna talk about that, okay? Yeah. we're gonna steer clear of that. I thought Neelix was used well for that.
Sorry, you need to give your rating. Yes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm gonna give it, since I think we do it out of five, I'm gonna give it probably 4.5, that feels a little high, maybe 4.25, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am right there with you. I mean, on Goodreads, I gave it a 5, and I'm not even ashamed. It was one of those where it's like, yeah, I mean, there are some issues. Yeah, I do wish that some of the characters were used a little bit more. And even some of the stuff at the beginning where he's just getting real detailed about what everyone does and... Mm-hmm. You know, and actually even some of Tom's like quips at the beginning,
it was to the point
where I was like, it's a little bit much sometimes, but, you know, so I wouldn't necessarily give it a solid 5, but I wouldn't knock it down enough to only give it a 4. It just, you know, I told you before we started recording, I read this in like 2 days. Like it was just a very, I wouldn't even necessarily call it an easy read. I mean, it was, but like, it was just a fast read. It was a page turner. You know, you just kind of wanted to see where things were going, which is so fun for a book, especially a Star Trek books when you can get some that aren't as strong. But yeah, it is a shame that we don't have too many Voyager books like this, because I think this is one, you know, that are set during the series.
But aren't hemmed in by the being written during the show
or whatever. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, we've recently gotten we get a lot of original series books that are set all throughout the timelines and everything, but we've recently gotten some Next Generation books that take place during the show. And I understand that, like, Voyager's probably not the bestseller series for them. It's going to be next gen. It's going to be original series. But I feel like if we gave another author, or heck, invite this author back, you know, just to write a banger of a story set during the series, you know, with, you know, knowing exactly how it starts and ends, then, you know, we would, I think we would talk that up pretty good, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And I just thought of this. I don't know if it's been done or if you want to do it, but when I was like doing the research for like when the book was came out, I saw the cover for this other book and I thought, if we can, if we're doing standalones, because I think we've talked about doing what our next big series that we'll read is, but whenever we get back to doing standalones, there is a Voyager standalone that's really short that I really want to do, and that's the Captain Proton one.
Oh, you know what? That's okay. Okay, we might need to do that. Man, I used to have a copy of it. Now I don't anymore, but I'll have to get one. I read that years and years ago. I think that would be a lot of fun, especially, you know, we need more Captain Proton things.
Exactly. There was like a slight moment where they were like, he was like, Tom was getting ready to do something, and B'Elanna's like, I am not doing a Captain Proton again.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, please do one.
Yeah. That would be funny. Well, yes, listeners, if you haven't read this one, I encourage you to do so. This is definitely highly recommended.
I agree.
Well, Jonathan, we have next time a very exciting episode.
Yes, we have our interview with Una McCormick for her new Star Trek Strange New Worlds novel, Asylum, which comes out in November. And so we'll be interviewing her, talking about all that. We'll discuss in the whole book. We'll have read it. I'm a little nervous. Never met Una before, but I'm excited.
I'm sure she's lovely. She's British.
I mean, of course, yeah.
Yeah,
I've heard her on the podcast before, so I know she's. But I know how she talks and what she sounds like.
There you go. Well, and you're an educator. She's an educator.
Oh, know, that's right. So. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember what she teaches. I have to ask her. It might be history. I don't know.
We'll find
or English. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, no, that'll be a lot of fun. It's always great having her on. It's always great just getting a new book from her too. It's been a while, but definitely excited to dive into that one. But in the meantime, while we're waiting with bated breath, where can people find you out on the interwebs?
You can find me on YouTube with my channel, Jonathan Cohn. Talk all things books, Star Trek, Star Wars, fantasy, sci-fi, thrillers, whatever. I'm probably reading it. And then I also have my Twitter or X account, or as I call it, Twix. I have my Twix account at Jonathan Cohn.
And you can find me on Goodreads and Letterboxd and X and Instagram at Knitting Trekkie. And you can also find me lurking around on Facebook in the Babel Conference. So definitely seek us out there. And yeah. Looking forward to next time, but until then, thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, live long
and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.